Senate will be in session. Members and guests, please rise for the invocation by the chaplain of the Senate and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
If you pray, please pray with me. God, you told your people to take their oaths in your name. What a relief to know that not only does that make us accountable to you in your justice and mercy, but also it shows that you come to help us keep our vows. Our Montana Constitution calls us to vow, I do solemnly swear that I'll support, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Montana, and that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity. Then we conclude that vow with the words, so help me God. Again, God, help us, we pray. Again, thank you for your help. I humbly pray in your name. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary will take the roll.
Mr. President, 50 members are present.
Quorum is present. The Senate is ready for business. Without objection, we'll go to our business number two, reports of standing committees.
Mr. President, we are convened on Business, Labor, and Economic Affairs. Report that House Bills 199 and 234 be concurred in, and that House Bills 130 and 193 be concurred in as amended. Senator C. Fitzpatrick, Chair. Mr. President, we are convened on Education and Cultural Resources. Report that Senate Bill 99 do pass as amended, and that House Bill 143 be concurred in. Daniel Solomon, Chair. Mr. President, we are Committee on Local Government. Report that Senate Bill 165 do pass. Senator Terry Goth, your chair. Mr. President, we are Committee on Natural Resources. Report that Senate Bill 136 do pass as amended. Senator Jeff Wellborn, chair. Mr. President, we are Committee on State Administration. Report that Senate Bill 175 do pass and that Senate Resolution 26 be adopted. Senator Doug Carey, chair. Mr. President, we are Committee on Taxation. Report that Senate Resolution 69 be adopted. Senator Brian Hovind, chair.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. President, we are Committee on State Administration. Report that Senate Resolution 14 be not adopted. Senator Doug Carey, Chair.
Senator Carey.
Thank you, Mr. President. The individuals were nominated by our previous administration. They are not supported by our current administration. I do ask the support that we sustain this motion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bennett.
Mr. President, I'm going to ask the body to reject this. This is a very, very important board. This is the Board of Veterans Affairs. These are people that have for years, months, depending on the different people, dedicated their time making sure that the people who have served us, that have fought and died on the battlefield, have been taken care of when they got home, and they've done it with distinction. These people deserve to be reconfirmed because they have done so much for the people who are fighting for us, both here in Montana and across the ocean. So I hope that you'll support them today.
The motion before us is to adopt the committee report on SR 14 of Do Not Pass. Those in favor of the motion will signify by voting aye. Those opposed, no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish changes or a vote? Senator Molnar?
Mr. President, 31 have voted yes, 19 have voted no.
31 senators haven't voted aye, and 19 senators haven't voted no. The committee report has been adopted.
That is all, Mr. President.
Order of business number five, messages from the other House.
Mr. President, I am directed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the following House bills were on this day for three several times and passed. Title and history agreed to, and they are herewith transmitted to the Senate for concurrence. House Bill 202, Logie. House Bill 217, Buttrey. House Bill 220, Putnam. House Bill 260, Burgley. House Bill 282, Anderson. That the following Senate bills were on this day were three several times concurred in, title and history agreed to, and they are herewith returned to the Senate. Senate Bill 67 is Fitzpatrick. Senate Bill 112 is Fitzpatrick. Sincerely, Carolyn Cheetah, Chief Clerk of the House. That is all, Mr. President.
Order business number six, first reading and commitment of bills.
Mr. President, Senate Bills 252 through 263, Senate Resolutions 75 and 76, Senate Joint Resolution 11, House Bills 202, 217, 220, 260, and 282 have been introduced, read first time and referred to committee. Senate Bill 264 has been introduced and read. Senate Bills 250 and 251 have been referred to committee. That is all, Mr. President.
Order business number seven, second reading of bills. Majority Leader Smith.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into a committee of the whole for consideration of business on second reading.
For the motion, Senator Smith, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. I appoint Senator Friedel, Chairman of the day.
Mr. Majority Leader Smith.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move Senate Bill 178 to the bottom of the board for the day.
Without objection, so moved. So ordered. Members of the Senate, please be in order. Members, you have before you, for your consideration, Senate Resolution 69. The clerk will read the history and title of the bill.
SR 60, introduced by Heimbach, a resolution of the Senate of the State of Montana concurring, confirming, and consenting to the appointment to the Board of Parks and Recreation made by the Governor and submitted by written communication dated January 13, 2021, to the Senate.
Are there any corrections to the history of the title of the bill as read?
None, Mr. Chairman.
The clerk will read the sections.
Section 1.
Members of the committee, you have now before you Senate Resolution 60. What is your pleasure, Senator Heimbach?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the nomination transmitted by the governor be concurred in and confirmed by the Senate in accordance with Senate Resolution 60.
Senator Heimbach.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Resolution 60 deals with the appointees to the park or Board of Parks and Recreation. There's three appointees, and they all are appointed till January 5th, 2025. One of the appointees is Jody Loomis from here in Helena. He will have this area, which is District 1. Another one is Russ Kipp. He's down in southeastern Montana, and he'll have District 2. Kathy McLean is from Glendive, Montana, and she'll have the eastern, the parks in east. That's how they'll kind of represent. So they all expressed a lot of concern for the parks, and they are all outdoors people, and we had good hearings, and I just recommend a due pass.
Are there any amendments?
None, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any discussion on the motion? See none. Senator Heimbach, Senator Lang, I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for the sponsor, please.
Do you yield?
Reluctantly.
Senator Heimbach, you're pretty vague. Southwest Montana. Could you tell me where Polaris, Montana is, please?
I sure can, because I just asked Senator Wellborn. It's not very far from Dillon.
Okay. I didn't know if the Polaris, is that a snowmobile or is that a town? So that's what I wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? I see none. Senator Heimbach, would you care to close? Senator closes. The question now arises on the motion of Senator Heimbach that this committee do rise and report after having under consideration Senate Resolution 69. It recommends the same do concur. As many are in favor of the motion, signify by voting aye. Those opposed, vote no. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? The clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chairman, 50 senators vote aye, 0 senators vote nay.
50 senators have voted aye, 0 senators have voted no. Senate Resolution 69 has been concurred and adopted on the second reading. Members, you have before you, for your consideration, Senate Judiciary 3. The clerk will read the history and title of the bill.
SJR 3, introduced by Gauthier, a joint resolution of the Senate and the House of Representatives of the State of Montana requesting an interim study of the feasibility of advanced nuclear reactors as a replacement for coal-fired boilers.
Are there any corrections to the history and title of the bill as read?
None, Mr. Chairman.
The clerk will now read the sections.
Section 1.
Members of the committee, you now have before you Senate Judiciary 3. What is your pleasure, Senator Gauthier?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration Senate Joint Resolution 3, that I recommend the same do pass, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gauthier.
First of all, Senate body, this is going to be an electrifying experience for you all today. I'm here today to describe a way to breathe new life into Colstrip. By transforming Colstrip Power Plant into a clean energy production facility that will provide good, high-paying, high-tech jobs into the future. So how can this be done? It can be accomplished by replacing the coal-fired boilers with small modular reactors. And we call those SMRs. Fourth generation advanced nuclear reactor. I'm going to ask you to leave your preconceptions behind. You may have about nuclear power behind for a moment and give SMRs a fair shake. If you do, you might just be amazed at what you learned today. A small modular reactors are a type of nuclear reactor which are smaller than conventional reactors. I'd like to have you take a look at a handout right now I put on your desk. I have a diagram right here. And the first one actually shows what the actual small modular reactor looks like sitting inside a body of water. The typical small modular reactor is approximately 90 feet in height. They're approximately about 16 foot wide. They're actually made within a specific manufacturing facility like a Ford F-250 would be. As you see in diagram number one, it shows them in the factory. Two, they are going to be sent the NuScale power module, including the containment and nuclear vessel, will be transported on a truck, if you see in number three, showing that that actual nuclear reactor, the module, is actually sent to the facility, which has already been built already at this point. And that particular small modular reactor will be placed in its holding pin. And number five, that actually shows that there will be actually 12 of those small modular reactors within inside the same building. So you got to kind of picture a small modular reactor looking like a thermos. Picture a Stanley thermos. The top part of this here thermos, the black part of it, is the only part that sticks above ground. The stainless steel portion of this is all underground. This is a very low footprint. So very exciting technology here. So they are approximately 1/16 in size and the standard size of a standard nuclear power plant. This allows them to be manufactured at an assembly plant and transported by truck, rail, or barges. This accelerates the on-site assembly and potentially to be operational within 3 months of delivery. There is actually a 150-point process for determining the suitability of this particular nuclear reactor to go into production. This process is one of the key elements to reducing the overall cost of the project. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the NRC, has approved the new reactor known as the Small Modular Reactor, the SMR. The design came from Portland, Oregon-based company called NuScale. They got the go-ahead. It's the first company in the United States to be certified by the Small Modular Reactor design and concept and eventually build a full-scale SMR in Idaho Falls, in a place called Idaho Nuclear Energy Laboratories. Facility starting in 2022, they're going to break ground. Also under review is TerraPower, which is also a small modular reactor operation with GE Hitachi. The main investor, of course, a lot of you people know is Bill Gates. Both companies have combined investment of over $2 billion invested in SMR technology. Why SMR, you say? Because fleets of SMR reactors can potentially produce all the electricity the U.S. will ever need. Zero carbon-based emission, providing baseload 24/7 power, even on those minus 20-degree days. But not without saying, complements the current green energy projects such as wind and solar. Fantasy or possibility? Consider this. Bill Gates projects 500 small modular reactors will be in the United States by the year 2050. Countries that are already moving forward with this small modular reactor designs is France, China, and Canada. China's already got 20 of them under production now. According to the World Nuclear Association, China is massively transitioning towards nuclear power due to the air pollution of coal-fired plants. They may have 35 reactors in operation now, but 20 are under construction. They plan to triple their nuclear capabilities by 2030. A number of these reactors will be among the world's most advanced small modular reactors, fourth generation advanced reactors. In other words, they can do this, why in the heck can't we? The primary consumers of Colstrip power are California, Oregon, and Washington. They have decided that they will no longer want to buy our electricity that's generated by fossil fuels after 2025. Effectively, Colstrip will close, leaving Montana approximately 500 megawatts short in power to run our state. We'll be forced to buy power for the first time off the grid, and we can expect to pay a minimum of a third to maybe even double the what we have for power that we're paying for now. So the timing's right. With newer technology coming available, it's an excellent time for the transition to SMRs. These new facilities are designed to be pleasing to the eye and blend into the communities. For these reasons, I'm asking that you approve my legislative study proposal to provide a thorough bipartisan examination of this fascinating new technology and its potential to revitalize Colstrip community, bolster Montana's economy, and for many years to come, maybe even Western Montana someday will have the SMR power in the future. So I'll stand back now and stand by for questions, and I'm hoping to receive many. Thank you.
Are there any amendments?
None, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any discussion on the motion? See none. Senator Gauthier, would you care to close?
Well, I was looking forward to a couple of questions. I got to know this subject pretty well. So some of the last bullet points I want to add here is Colstrip with the SMR fully operational, we can possibly see that by 2030. We can see 360 full-time employees with the potential of being union employees too. I'd had to throw that in there. 1,200 construction jobs are going to be required to build this facility over a period of 3 years. 677 construction jobs over the three-year period time. And these jobs will last minimum 60 years, potentially to 80 years, because the lifespan of the small modular reactor is minimum of 60 years. It will provide $16 million in taxes, $470 million in local goods and services to support the small modular reactor in Colstrip. Retain Colstrip employees. We're going to repurpose them, retrain them, and they'll learn how to work on with the reactor. We'll still need electricians and plumbers, but the whole goal of this is to reutilize all the people out there now. Preserve the local tax base and have a healthy economy for the working families, communities up to 80 years. Please, at the end of the session, I'd ask you to take this study resolution. I realize there's going to be lots of them. But it's going to be really imperative that you take the study resolution when it's time at the end and prioritize it and put it in the top 10, because without being in the top 10, we'll never see the funding to actually go through with this. So with that being said, please put SMRs on the top of your list. And thank you for your time today.
The question now arises on the motion of Senator Gauthier that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration SJ3, it recommends that same do be adopted. As many of in favor of the motion signify by saying A. Those opposed say no. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk will record their vote.
Mr. Chairman, 50 senators vote aye, 0 senators vote nay.
50 senators have voted aye, 0 senators have voted no. SJ3 has passed. Members, you have before you for consideration Senate Bill 140. The clerk will read the history and title of the bill.
Senate Bill 140, introduced by Vergeer and Ellsworth, a bill for an act entitled an act generally revising laws related to certain judicial appointments, providing a direct appointment process for the governor to appoint district court judges and Supreme Court justices to fill judicial vacancies, repealing the Judicial Nomination Commission, amending sections, repealing sections, and providing an immediate effective date.
Are there any corrections to the history of the title of the bill as read?
None, Mr. Chairman.
Clerk will read the sections.
Sections 1 through 13.
Members of the committee, you now have before you Senate Bill 140. What is your pleasure, Senator McGreer?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration Senate Bill 140, that it recommend the same do pass, Mr. Chairman.
Senator McGreer.
Members of the Senate, Senate Bill 140 will repeal the Judicial Nomination Commission and allow for the governor to directly appoint district court judges and allow Supreme Court justice to directly fill water judge positions. The Judicial Nomination Commission provides the governor with a list of candidates for appointments to fill any vacancy on the Supreme Court or any district court. Also, the Judicial Nomination Commission provides the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court with a list of candidates for appointment to fill any term or vacancy for the chief water judge
or associate water judge. This commission was set up in 1973. There wasn't an internet then that could be used to process judicial candidates. In committee testimony, it was said that the commission should be kept because it's tradition. Tradition may work, but it doesn't always mean it's the best way. Take a look at the bill with me, but I want to start on section 11, page 6. This part repeals a section of Montana code that establishes the Judicial Nomination Commission. It makes for an interesting read if you have time. Okay, section 1 of the bill sets how vacancies are to be noticed. Section 2 gives the qualifications for an appointment. Section 3 tells how to apply for an opening. Section 4 allows for public comment. Section 5 gives a timeline for appointments. Section 6 explains the Senate confirmation process. Section 7 explains that an appointment is only until an election. Section 8 and 9 are conforming existing law to fit the workers' compensation judge and water judge with Senate Bill 140. In Montana Code 3-1-1010, the Judicial Nomination Commission is to present a list of 3 to 5 nominees to the governor to choose from. If the governor fails to nominate within 30 days, the Chief Justice will make an appointment. At the federal level, the president appoints and the Senate approves or disapproves judicial nominations. Senate Bill 140 is consistent with that process. I want to point out to you there is not a nomination committee that brings choices to the governor for department directors, or there is not a committee that brings a list of choices for the various state boards. The governor should be able to directly choose vacant judgeships the same way. Senate Bill 140 will do that, Mr. Chair.
Are there any amendments?
Mr. Chairman, I move to amend Senate Bill 140, signed Senator Gross.
What is your pleasure, Senator Gross?
Mr. Chairman, I move to amend Senate Bill 140 with amendment number SB 01400020002 and request the same be posted and deemed read.
Senator Gross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good senators. The amendment here does exactly what it says, and I'm going to read from it. This goes in section 1, following line 16, little I. Members of the governor's family are ineligible for appointment. And double little I, the lieutenant governor, members of the governor's personal staff, and cabinet-level appointees are ineligible for appointment for a period of 2 years after leaving their position. So it was argued that allowing the governor direct authority to appoint Supreme Court justices and district court judges will create more accountability and more transparency. When the people of Montana ratified a new constitution in 1972, we were told that the governor would select from a list of nominees and that this would not just be a political process in the governor's office. The current structure provides public access to the nominees' interviews, which are not behind closed doors, as would be the case if this bill becomes law. The list of applicants provides the governor with that list, but the public would have no way of knowing what questions were being asked during interviews in the governor's office. So I'm not convinced that the bill before us in any way achieves that goal, and this amendment actually would bring more accountability and more transparency to the process if this bill becomes law. This amendment at least gives the people of Montana some assurance that the governor is not simply selecting judges to suit his own agenda by appointing his closest political allies. Mr. Chairman.
Is there any discussion on the amendment?
Thank you, Senator Mr. Chairman. Members, I ask you to resist this amendment. It was tried, exact same amendment in committee and rejected there. It's really unnecessary. We're talking about filling vacancies until the next election. So please vote red on this one.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, Senator Gross, would you like to care to close on your amendment?
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to thank the good chairman of the Judiciary Committee for letting folks know that this amendment was brought once before. I feel very strongly that this amendment does provide some transparency and accountability. And, you know, serving in the governor's office or on his cabinet is a privilege. If you aren't comfortable with the limitation on being a judge, then maybe you shouldn't serve in that position. I'd also point out that the limitation is only for 2 years, and that's consistent with existing law. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The question now arises on the motion of the Senate, Senator, that the Senate Bill 140, amended 01400200 be amended. As many are in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye. Those who oppose, vote no. The clerk will read the vote.
Mr. Chairman, 21 senators vote aye, 29 senators vote nay.
21 senators voting aye and 29 senators voting no. The amendment has failed. Chair, are there any other further amendments?
None, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Is there discussion on the original motion? Senator Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to draw everyone's attention to the Constitutional Convention and the way that their delegates weighed in on this exact issue. When the Judiciary Committee of the Constitutional Convention considered this issue, it produced a minority and a majority report to be considered by the delegates as a whole. It was the minority report written by Republican delegates that would ultimately be adopted in Article 7, Section 8 of the Montana Constitution, which governs the selection of judges. In that report, the delegates wrote the following, quote, "The minority is not satisfied with the current process of unlimited gubernatorial appointed power of judges. In light of statistics revealing that an overwhelming majority of our judiciary have been appointed by the governor, we are especially apprehensive of the future political character of our judges. Therefore, we have limited the governor's nomination to these nominees selected by a committee." End of the quote. When the report came before the convention, it was debated extensively. Delegate Thomas Joyce, a Democrat from Butte, carried the proposal that is before us today in the form of this bill to give the governor direct appointment of judges. He argued that Montana should be allowed or should allow the governor direct authority to appoint who they want. And he argued, as the proponents do now, that the governor can be trusted to make these appointments without being constrained by a nominating convention or commission. Mr. Joyce's arguments were rejected by the framers of our state constitution at the Constitutional Convention by a vote of 26 to 69. We also talk a lot about how Montana is not like Washington, D.C., that things are different here. I think that we can all agree that our national politics have become far too mean, far too partisan, and do not work for the best interests of our constituents. I think the framers of our state constitution foresaw these things and sought to preserve our state's political system. By removing the protections of the nominating commission, all we do is make our judiciary more partisan and our politics a lot more like Washington, D.C. We have heard the arguments of proponents that the current composition of the commission is too partisan. The framers of our Constitution anticipated that as well, and they thought there might be a problem that arises, and they had a solution. And it's the same one that witnesses at the hearing suggested. We can simply change the commission's composition. We can change how it operates. If there is a problem, we can fix it. Instead, I fear we are poised to move recklessly forward to abolish something which has worked and make it easier and almost guaranteed that we will have a partisan process. I'll remind you that this change will apply to the governor, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican. At the end of the convention's debate on this issue, one delegate pointed out to the sponsor that it was possible the legislature would not create the commission that the convention contemplated. And this was their response, and I think this is especially telling. They said, quote, "Yes, but I think this is pretty clear direction to the legislature of the intent of the convention," unquote. So members of the body, we have the direction from the Constitutional Convention, and I urge you to follow it.
Is there any other discussion on the motion? Senator McGillery.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to speak to this bill real briefly by reading to you from Article 7, Section 8 of the Montana Constitution. Regardless of what may or may not have been said, I think the Constitution is pretty clear. For any vacancy in the office of the Supreme Court Justices or District Court Judge, the governor shall appoint a replacement from nominees selected in the manner prescribed by law. So the framers of the Constitution, the Montana Constitution, gave us in this body the ability to prescribe by law how we will have the governor select vacancies for the district court. And I think that it's pretty clear, and I would recommend a due pass on this bill.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Speak to the bill. This bill basically gives the governor more power. But what bothers me the most about this bill is that it's treating our judges like department heads. Our judges are a separate branch of government and that they should be treated differently. The system has worked for 50 years. Let it continue to work. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the motion? See none. Senator Regeard, would you care to close?
Thank you. I would.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. Senator Sands has, I believe she has a comment.
Senator Sands.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the body. I, too, rise in opposition to this bill. I think this is probably the most important bill we're going to see this session because it actually restructures a fundamental part of our separation of powers strategy for Montana's government. You know, one of the letters I received was from Maynan Ellingson, who was a member of the Constitutional Convention and spent a lifetime as a very prominent attorney in our state. And this is what she said in response to this bill. She said the creation of the commission was in response that there be a broadly based, nonpartisan, nonpolitical commission that would review judicial candidates to keep the selection process free from partisan interests. I cannot see what purpose this legislation serves other than installing purely partisan judges rather than judges who have been vetted by an independent board for the highest standards of competence and ethics. So while the opponents to this bill agree, you know, who came in against this bill? The state bar came in, the Montana Judges Association, the Montana trial attorneys, the Montana defense trial attorneys, and when do those two ever agree? They're pretty much unanimous that this is not a bill that is supported by our legal and judicial community. This is a bad idea. So what is it really about? Well, in my view, this is a power grab by the current governor to be able to handpick judges without independent vetting or adequate public input or transparency. It's a step backward into the history of Montana when the courts were very much dominated by special interests and partisan interests. The judicial nomination commission has served the state of Montana well for over 40 years, and I think we should thank them for their service and concur that they do a good job by voting no on this bill, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Heimbaugh.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to speak to the bill. I was one of the yes votes in the Judicial Committee. We made the case that all the judge appointees were already partisan. All the people on the nominating committee almost exclusively give money to Democrat candidates. And they pick three people for the governor to pick from. That's a pretty tight rein on him. The other thing that I'd like to bring out is before our governor's first term is over, he would not be able to change that nominating committee. So it's a great bill, and let's go green.
Senator Gross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll speak to the bill also. In fact, the governor would be able to change the composition of the Judicial Nominating Commission over the course of his term because the four lay people on that commission serve staggered terms. So each year of the governor's term, he could replace one of those nominees. And if we're going to talk about partisanship and political contributions, then we need to be fair, and we need to look at the political contribution history of the governor himself. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any discussion on the motion, offline or online?
Seeing none online, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Regeer, you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, I do. Some talk about the Constitution. I want to point out this nomination commission is not in the Constitution. It's in statute. Good Senator from Billings pointed that out, that the Constitution just says that the governor would make these appointments according to law. So, yeah, we're changing the law. It'll be according to that. By having Senate Bill 140, we're actually going to increase the number of attorneys who can apply to be considered for an appointment. More applicants should increase the chance that competent applicant is found in the vacancy. It's a good bill. I ask for a green light.
The question now arises on the motion of Senator Regeer that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration Senate Bill 140, it recommends the same do pass. As many are in favor of the motion, signify by voting aye. Those opposed, vote no. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Seeing none, clerk record the vote.
Mr. Chairman, 31 senators vote aye, 19 senators vote nay.
31 senators have voted aye, 19 have voted no. Senate Bill 140 has passed. Members, you have before you, for your consideration, the Senate Bill 135. The clerk will read the history of the title of the bill.
Senate Bill 135, introduced by Fitzpatrick, a bill for an act entitled an act revising the appeal process for county zoning decisions, clarifying that an appeal from a Board of Adjustment to the Board of County Commissioners is a de novo review and amending section.
Are there any corrections to the history of the title of the bill as read?
None, Mr. Chairman.
The clerk will read the sections.
Section 1.
Members of the committee, you now have before you Senate Bill 135. What is your pleasure? Senator Fitzpatrick.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration Senate Bill 135, it recommends the same do pass.
Senator Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a bill which revises the appeal process coming out of the Board of Adjustments on zoning matters. I think those of you around in 2015, we passed a bill that allowed the appeals from the Board of Adjustments to go to the County Commission instead of having them go to district court. And the idea at that time was we were going to eliminate some of the legal costs and liability that was associated with those decisions because boards of adjustment were making some decisions that didn't withstand legal scrutiny. This is an optional process. A county doesn't have to do it if they don't want to do it. However, recently there was a decision from a district court that ruled that when a county does implement this process, it's a very limited review on appeal. And what that means is that the county commission doesn't have the ability in many circumstances to fix illegal or unlawful decisions by the Board of Adjustments. So what this bill does is it says that when you appeal to the county commission gets to hold basically a new hearing. It can hear new evidence, it can consider new evidence, and it gets to make any decision that it needs to make in those circumstances. So really what this does is it provides kind of a fresh start on appeal. New evidence can be considered, a new hearing can be held, and a new decision which is legal can be made in that appeal process. So with that, I would ask for your support.
Are there any amendments?
None, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing no discussion, Senator Fitzpatrick, do you care to close? Senator closes. The question now rises on the motion of Senator Fitzpatrick that this committee does rise and report after having under consideration Senate Bill 135 is recommended the same do pass. As many of you are in favor of the motion, signify by voting aye. Those opposed, vote no. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, record the vote.
Mr. Chairman, 50 senators vote aye, 0 senators vote nay.
50 senators voted aye, 0 voted no. Senate Bill 135 has passed. Members, You have before you your consideration on Senate Bill 44. The clerk will read the history of the title of the bill.
Senate Bill 44, introduced by ASP, a bill for an act entitled an act generally revising laws related to subdivision sanitation review, providing definitions, extending rulemaking authority, allowing local entities to establish fees for subdivision exemption review, revising subdivision exemptions, requiring notification to purchasers for certain unreviewed lots, and amending sections.
Are there any corrections to the history to the title of the bill as read?
None, Mr. Chairman.
The clerk will read the sections.
Sections 1 through 10.
Members of this committee, now you have before you Senate Bill 44. What is your pleasure, Senator Esp?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee does rise and report, after having under consideration Senate Bill 44, recommend the same do pass, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Esp.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 44 came out of an interim process that the Department of Environmental Quality put together under the auspices of their subdivision and development advisory committee, and that committee included a broad base of stakeholders throughout Montana that took part in at least the DEQ processes in course of their work or in course of their employment as regulators or planners and those sorts of things. So there was a broad base of people that got together and tried to come to consensus on some changes that needed to be done in the area of DEQ approval of subdivisions and improvements that they had broad consensus on. So Senate Bill 44 was a product of that. Because of the COVID crisis and things, they didn't have as many meetings as they hoped. They didn't get as broad a consensus as they hoped, and the bill had to be pre-introduced before everybody weighed in on it. So in the bill, you'll see a lot of things that were amended out from the initial amendment from the department, and so most of those changes were done because they couldn't get consensus. So what's left in the bill did have broad consensus. I would speak to one area that was put in Senate local government, and that is an area that included some exemption for stormwater. And if you look on page 5, middle of the page, it says that you can exempt stormwater review on certain parcels that are 5 acres or larger in total, with total impervious area does not and will not exceed 5%. Nothing in this section relieves any person of the duty to comply with requirements of Title 75, Chapter 5, or the rules adopted thereof. And so that was an amendment we put on in committee. It was written by the department. Our hope is that it'll give some flexibility for complying with stormwater review. So that's the only thing that didn't go through the process. That was partly my bright idea and a couple other people. But so I hope you support the bill, members of the committee. Thank you very much.
Are there any amendments?
None, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Senator Esp, would you care to close? Senator closes. The question now arises on the motion of Senator Esp that when this committee does rise and report after having it under consideration, Senate Bill 44, it recommends the same do pass. As many are in favor of the motion by voting aye, those opposed vote no. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Seeing none, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chairman, 50 senators vote aye, 0 senators vote nay.
50 senators have voted aye, 0 have voted no. Senate Bill 44 has passed. Members, you have before you for your consideration Senate Bill 161. The clerk will read the history and title of the bill.
Senate Bill 161, introduced by Espen Bertaglio, a bill for an act entitled an act generally revising subdivision laws allowing an expedited review for subdivisions that meet certain requirements, exempting certain subdivisions and cities and towns from certain reviews, allowing a county to adopt expedited review provisions requiring a local government to hold a hearing to approve or deny a subdivision application for expedited review, clarifying the amount of time within which may bring action to challenge the approval, imposition of conditions, or denial of the preliminary plan and actions taken on the final plan and amending sections.
Are there any corrections to the history of the title of the bill as read?
None, Mr. Chairman.
The clerk will read the sections.
Sections 1 through 3.
Members of this committee, you have now before you Senate Bill 161. What is your pleasure, Senator Resp?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration Senate Bill 161 and recommend the same do pass, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Resp?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 161 also came out of a collaborative process, although not a formal one. The folks that represent local governments, both cities and counties, and some of the developers and the planners got together and tried to figure out, is there some way we can improve the subdivision process? And at first they had a broad scope of things they were going to look at, and they narrowed it down to addressing certain lots in areas that were zoned and planned, that if there was an allowable use on that lot that allowed three different uses, let's say for example, then that bill could use a process, that lot could be divided under this process into three different lots in an expedited fashion. So when it came to us, the original bill included cities and towns and areas where they have city or where they have water districts and sewer districts out in the country. Most of the objection for the bill was because of the county areas that they were considering putting under this bill, and they thought it was too much too soon. So that's been amended out. The bill not only includes those areas of cities that are both zoned and come under the planning process. So if it's allowed under current zoning, then they can use this, like if they wanted to put a Buttery store down here on the old Capitol Hill Mall and a Starbucks and some other business on another corner, they could do that legally now without subdivision review. This just says they can use this process to create three different owners of those things. So ask your concurrence, members of the committee.
Are there any amendments?
None, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Senator Resp, would you care to close? Senator closes. The question now arises on the motion of Senator Resp that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration Senate Bill 161, it recommends the same do pass. Has many in favor of the motion by signifying by saying aye. Those opposed say no. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, record the vote.
Mr. Chairman, 50 senators vote aye, 0 senators vote nay.
50 senators have been voted aye, 0 voted no. Senate Bill 161 has passed. Members, you have before you in consideration Senate Bill 178. The clerk will read the history and the title of the bill. Oh, excuse me, I apologize. I can't talk about my bill yet. let's go back through that again. Members, you have before you for your consideration Senate Bill 149. The clerk will read the history and the title of the bill.
Senate Bill 149, introduced by McGilvery, Ellsworth, and Smith, a bill for an act entitled Act providing the establishment of health care sharing ministries, defining health care sharing ministry, providing for disclaimers on materials distributed by health care sharing ministries, exempting health care sharing ministries from regulation as insurance, and amending sections.
Are any corrections to the history of the title of the bill as read?
None, Mr. Chairman.
The clerk will read the sections.
Sections 1 through 4.
Members of this committee, you have now before you Senate Bill 178. What is your pleasure, Senator McGilvery?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration Senate Bill 149, that it recommend the same do pass.
Senator McGilvery.
Mr. Chairman, before I go into the bill, I do have a very simple technical amendment that I'd like to move. That is Amendment SB 014-900-2001.
Apparently there's an amendment. Are there any amendments? Okay, you got
yes.
that one. What is your pleasure, Senator McGilvery?
Mr. Chairman, just this amendment that I, all it does is strike the word penalties on line 13. And I was reading the bill this morning, I noticed that this word was not stricken back when there were some penalties in the bill. So I would just encourage the body to vote yes on this amendment and we can get it cleaned up. Thank you.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, Senator McGilvery, would you care to close your amendment? Senator closes. The question now arises on the motion of the Senate, Senator, that Senate Bill 149 with the amended 014900-2001 be amended. As many are in favor of the motions, signify by saying aye. Those opposed, vote no. Member will record the clerk will revoke the vote.
Mr. Chairman, 47 senators vote aye, 3 senators vote nay.
47 senators have voted aye, 3 have voted no. The amendment has passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just move Senate Bill 149 as amended.
Is there any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chairman, just open on this bill. This is the Christian HealthShare Ministry Bill. And what this bill does, just to give you a little example, when I left the legislature in 2012, I had insurance, and I looked at the cost of the insurance after I left the legislature, and it was going to be about $1,500 a month. And in my career as a financial advisor, I had individuals who talked to me that they had these Christian healthcare sharing ministry plans, and probably 30 years ago they were first telling me about it. And at first I was kind of skeptical. I thought, well, we'll see how this goes. And over the years I had more clients tell me about their health sharing ministry bill or plans, how they worked for them and how they were effective. And it just came to pass that I realized that this was a very good option for myself. So what I did was, when I got out of the legislature in 2012, I got a hold of the Christian Healthcare Sharing Ministry that I'm a part of now. I looked at their audited financial statements. I looked at their books. I talked to people who were involved in it. And this ministry had been around nearly 32 years at that time. Now it's been around 40 years helping individuals take care of their healthcare costs. So what this bill does then is it simply codifies in law the healthcare sharing ministries. And Section 1 explains exactly, defines the ministries, that they are tax exempt, that there are people who share a common set of ethical and religious principles and beliefs, that the members share medical expenses with each other, that these ministries have been around since 1999 or before, and that they conduct annual audits, and that they do not use compensated insurance producers or agents. And then it provides a notice that is required to be put on all applications or material that the ministries have. So again, this simply just codifies the health sharing ministries and gives nearly 18,000 Montanans the ability to continue to use these ministries, which have worked extremely well for many years. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pope.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I wanted to express my reasons for being a no on Senate Bill 149, which deregulates a niche of Montana healthcare without assurances that thousands of Montana consumers might be left high and dry with few, if any, protections normally provided under state law. Mr. Chair, if I just might comment that testimony on the bill in our Business and Labor Committee raised more questions than answers. We heard that thousands of Montanans participate in these shared health care plans where monthly donations are required in return for health care services. But, Mr. Chair, in actuality, shared health care provides no contractual guarantee of service. We heard from proponents that much is unknown about these programs. how many health shared health care programs operate in Montana? We don't know. Serving how many Montanans? We just heard a number. That number I don't believe was in our committee, but perhaps that's the right number. But what is the quality of health care being provided by these programs? Other disturbing issues were also raised. Some ministries said this bill is anti-competitive to those new shared health care ministries wanting access to the Montana market, but this bill would disqualify them because they weren't established as part of the ACA back in 1999. Mr. Chair, shared health care is a hybrid delivery system that feels like insurance. You pay a monthly charge to receive future benefits for unknown future health problems, but a consumer in this case has no certainty of receiving any particular level of health care service. And of course, if a member should get diabetes or cancer or be seriously injured, shared health care offers no catastrophic protection. So indicating that this is not insurance on a sheet of paper, which is provided by in this bill, might be a step in the right direction, but it doesn't solve the underlying issue. Who's going to take care of these folks when they get really sick? And who's going to pay the bill for their catastrophic care? Mr. Chair, this is not a bill ready for prime time. Let's not remove regulatory protections until we have a much more complete understanding of shared health care, how it actually works, what the protections and remedies must be in place for this class of Montana consumers when, as it happens, things do not go as planned. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I urge a no vote on Senate Bill 149. Thanks.
Senator Bullen. You're muted, Senator Bullen.
Senator Bullen, you are muted.
I'm going to change my mind, my name. I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to speak to the bill. Members, I just want to point out a couple things that I think you should know, and I'd like to share them with you. If you'll turn to page 2, line 11 through 16 in the bill, starting at the end of line 11, it says, without health care insurance, there is no guarantee that you, fellow members, or any other person who is in a health care sharing ministry agreement will be protected in the event of illness or emergency. And it goes on and continues to say, regardless of whether you receive help with medical expenses or whether the health care sharing ministry terminates, withdraws from the faith-based agreement, or continues to operate, you are always personally responsible for the payment of your medical bills. Members, it just doesn't make sense to me that you not only have to have your own health care insurance coverage, but you also have to make a monthly payment into the health care sharing ministry coverage. And particularly when there is no guarantee you will have any medical bills paid for. I also want to point out, and it's not clear in the bill, how the decisions are made of which medical bills will be paid for. It is also unclear who actually is in charge of making these decisions to pay or not pay for any medical bills you may have. And what happens if, it was mentioned earlier, if there is a catastrophic illness, is there going to be enough money in that particular fund to pay for this or any other medical bills that may come forward? Members of the Senate, this bill has too many unanswered questions for me to be able to support, and I urge a do not pass on Senate Bill 149. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hertz.
Mr. Chair, will the sponsor yield to a question?
Will you yield?
I yield.
Mr. Chair, Senator, can you kind of maybe explain the history of some of these catastrophic events that people may have cancer or something, how this might be treated in the healthcare ministry?
Absolutely. Thank you for the question. Mr. Chairman, yes, we receive, and members who are part of the health sharing ministries received a monthly publication. In that publication, we read month after month after month of people who have had catastrophic cancer, surgeries, accidents, you name it. And not only that these catastrophic conditions have been covered and taken care of, but they're also a spiritual dimension for the ministries. They're prayed for. They're encouraged. They're sent cards of love and prayer and encouragement. So absolutely, all kinds of catastrophic needs are being taken care of month after month, up to the tune of billions and billions of dollars.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chair, I'll speak to the bill. Let's just imagine here, you're not a state employee, you're not a legislator who's got a great plan. $1,000 deductible, doesn't cost much to add your family. You're just a regular working class family in Montana, you get to buy your own insurance. You may have a house, a couple kids, your equity in your house is $30,000. You buy a regulated plan from the state of Montana that costs you $1,500 a month. The cost of that's $18,000. It has a deductible of $6,500. Before you even get a nickel out of that plan, it costs you $24,500. Except, there's one exception, a wellness coverage. You get to go to the doctor once a year, get your health screening, and it's 100% paid for. We all talk about how important it is to have insurance, but can you imagine being that family spending $24,000 a year before your insurance even kicks in? Or you think they are worried about going bankrupt and losing what little equity, the money that they could save on that? They talk about junk insurance. I mean, we are selling junk insurance. This is a good option for individuals to choose. I would encourage a strong yes on this bill. Thank you.
Senator Smith.
Mr. Chairman, I've been looking at healthcare sharing ministries ever since I became a member of the legislature. And when the Affordable Health Care Act came out, I took it seriously. And I looked through that big government bill that was over 3,000 pages long and thought, you know, there must be something in here I can agree with. And I'd never heard about healthcare sharing ministries until that. I was looking at the individual mandate. Now, if you remember, with the Affordable Health Care Act, there was a big, big concern that we have a lot of people in America that are not covered by insurance, and they become a burden upon society. Now, whether you agree with that or not, that was the basis for having what they called the individual mandate in the Affordable Health Care Act. Well, there are groups of people that were exempt from the individual mandate. And the reason why they were exempt from the individual mandate, and this was a provision that was pushed by Senator Max Baucus, because there's a group of people that take care of themselves. They're not a burden to society. They understand the importance of taking care of one another. They do things like we talk about a lot in Montana, where agreements are made with a handshake, not through government regulation, not through laws that we hold in place to hold insurance companies accountable, but people are accountable to one another, to each other. And these people do such a great job of taking care of themselves, their individuals, that having a healthcare sharing ministry agreement exempted you from having to participate in the mandate that said you had to have insurance. This covered that mandate that you were taking care of and were not a burden upon society. We can do things a lot better in America. We can do things a lot better in the state of Montana. Regulation, government regulation, forcing insurance companies to pay, and it was just mentioned by the good senator to my side here, of the amount of money you put into insurance. One of the most expensive portions of healthcare in America is insurance itself. Healthcare sharing ministries greatly reduce that cost, just like the primary healthcare providers that I worked on a while ago. We can do things better. We need to keep looking at innovative ways to take care of our healthcare needs. And I think the idea that we're going to be doing something where we've agreed as individuals, as people, to take care of each other, that's more important than what government can ever do for us. Please give this bill a green light. It's a great program.
Is there any other discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Senator Gross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the body. I'll be very brief. I just want to say that healthcare sharing ministries can allow, they get to pick and choose what kind of coverage you get. So someone who wanted birth control, for example, may not be able to receive that type of coverage through a healthcare sharing ministry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any other discussion on the motion, offline or online? Seeing none, Senator Gilroy, would you care to close?
Yes, thank you. I just want to go through a few more examples here. Again, when I was reelected to the legislature, I didn't take the state insurance plan. I have something which I would consider way better. So I just, back in 2012, I kicked health insurance to the curb, and I joined a sharing ministry. And when I had the opportunity to take the state health insurance plan, I said, no way. I have something way better. Just give you an example. My daughter-in-law, who had an insurance plan, health insurance plan, had an appendectomy about a year ago. And after all was said and done with her deductibles and copays and all the things that health insurance requires from you as an individual, there, my son and her out-of-pocket expenses were $8,000. I said to her, if you had had the Christian health care sharing ministry plan that we have and that she now has and that my daughter has also, your out-of-pocket would have been zero. Zero. And I've met people out on the campaign trail that are paying $25,000 or $30,000 a year for their insurance plans. That is simply unaffordable. Talk about putting people in a position, in an untenable position, where their insurance is unaffordable and then the out-of-pocket costs are unaffordable. This is an excellent opportunity, a great plan. It gives people freedom to choose. And this idea that you don't know what you have is not true. You have a plan that's well laid out, that you can read, that you can study, that you can understand. You can have ministry individuals that can help coach you and help you understand what you have. So there's a tremendous amount of help to exactly know what it covers or what it doesn't cover. But let me tell you, compared to the average insurance plan, you are way ahead to have a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. These are great options. And just one last thing, just reading out of the last month's newsletter, there was an individual who had a heart attack. He went, told them he was self-pay, is what we do when we're members of the ministry. We say we're self-pay, that will be reimbursed by the sharing ministry. This individual got $210,000 of discounts. The average individual in the Christian healthcare sharing ministries gets 50 cents on the dollar waived off their bills. And this is another thing I would point out. You're helped to learn how to shop, you're coached on how to shop, and you get tremendous discounts. So these are great opportunities for people in Montana that are of low income. This body ought to consider this. These plans are very effective for people with low incomes. It gives them an opportunity to have a plan that covers their needs with low out-of-pocket costs. My personal responsibility is $500 a month. And if I go to the doctor or the hospital and negotiate more than $500 in discounts, my out-of-pocket is zero. These are excellent plans, particularly for low-income individuals, something I think we can all get behind, Mr. Chairman. Vote green.
The question now arises on the motion of Senator McGillery that when this committee does rise and report after having under consideration Senate Bill 149, it recommends do pass. As many are in favor of the motion by signifying aye, those vote no. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Seeing none, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chairman, 31 senators vote aye, 19 senators vote nay.
31 senators have voted aye, 19 have voted no. Senate Bill 149 has passed. Members, you have before you in consideration Senate Bill 144. The clerk will read the history and title of the bill.
Senate Bill 144, introduced by Fitzpatrick, a bill for an act entitled an act removing term limits for the Board of Real Estate Appraisers and amending section.
The clerk will read the sections.
Section 1.
Members of this committee, you have now before you Senate Bill 144. What is your pleasure, Senator Fitzpatrick?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration Senate Bill 144, it recommends the same do pass.
Senator Fitzpatrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a bill which removes the term limits on the Board of Real Estate Appraisers. If you can see, when you serve on the board, you serve a three-year term, and under current law, you can only serve three terms. This is a board which governs a small industry. There are approximately 300 appraisers in the state of Montana. This is also a board that is subject to federal oversight, which makes it important that you have a good diversity of members on the board. They look to have people that can do agricultural appraisals, commercial appraisals, residential. And over the last few years, it's become very difficult to find people to serve on this board. I think it hasn't come out yet, but there is a resolution for appointing people to this board, and you're going to see at least one name that had been appointed by Governor Bullock, and that person has been reappointed by Governor Gianforte. So I think that goes to speak the difficulty it is to find people to serve on this board. This is not, like I said, they're having trouble finding people to serve on the board, but more importantly, there are also other boards in the state of Montana which do not have term limits. I have the list here, if I could read them. Electricians, plumbers, sanitarians, behavioral health, barbers, cosmetologists, respiratory care, public accountants, and optometry. So we're not asking to do anything unusual here. This is a small profession, a limited number of people serve on these boards, and I'd ask for your support on this motion.
Are there any amendments?
None, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Online or offline? Seeing none, Senator Fixbeck.
Okay. Thank
Senator
you,
Sweeney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, I think while this bill is well-intended, we have term limits. We all have term limits, and we have them for a reason. And that's because if we don't have them, it consolidates power. I reached out to several appraisers and heard from some, and even people that served on the board, and they said there's not the lack of people serving on the board. It's just a lack of reaching out to try to find people to fill these positions. So I will vote no.
Any other discussion? Offline or online? Going once, twice. Senator Fitzpatrick, do you care to close?
Yes, just a quick point. We're not consolidating power here. We're talking about a board that's appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. And you know, we've just had a significant ideological shift between the previous governor and this governor, and we're still seeing the same people be appointed. So I think that goes to speak to the point that it's hard to find people for these positions, and that's why this bill is necessary. Thank you.
The question now arises on the motion of Senator Fitzpatrick that when this committee does rise and report after consideration, Senate Bill 144, it recommends that do same pass. As many are in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye. Those who vote no. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Seeing none, the clerk will record the vote.
Mr. Chairman, 32 senators vote aye, 18 senators vote nay.
32 senators have voted aye, 18 senators have voted no. Senate Bill 144 has passed.
Members of the Senate, please be in order. Members of the Senate, you now have before you for your consideration Senate Bill 178. The clerk will read the history and the title of the bill.
Senate Bill 178, introduced by Friedel and others, a bill for an act entitled an act prohibiting state building codes from requiring mandatory installation of fire sprinkler systems in certain residential buildings, amending section, and providing an immediate effective date.
Are there any corrections to the history of the title of the bill as read?
None, Mr. Chairman.
The clerk will read the sections.
Sections 1 through 2.
Members of the committee, you now have before you for your consideration Senate Bill 178. What is your pleasure, Senator Friedel?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee does rise and report the report after having under consideration Senate Bill 178, that it do recommend same do pass.
Senator Friedel.
Chairman, Mr. Chairman, the reason why I brought this forth today is it's a simple bill. It talks about mandatory or the lack thereof, actually repealing mandatory of sprinkler systems. Now, the opponents came, the firefighters, the sprinkler systems, everybody came in opposition. They made great arguments. In fact, their arguments are sound. Their arguments are that sprinkler systems were effective. This particular bill does not talk about the effectiveness of sprinkler systems. It talks about allowing or mandating into the state code whether we want to have sprinkler systems be mandated in single residential area or two, or what we call townhomes of two families. This does not talk about how the effectiveness of sprinkler systems. It merely talks about whether we should mandate it to be in state code to require residentials, single family or two family, be implemented. Thank you.
Are there any amendments?
None, Mr. Chairman.
Is there discussion on the motion? Senator Sands.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, I rise in opposition to this bill. And I spent some time talking with the firefighter people and also local governments dealing with the development of subdivisions in these kinds of facilities. And the sponsor is correct. There is no current state law that requires such codes to be adopted as part of the building and life safety codes. It doesn't exist. There's a variety of options that are available to subdivisions to choose from when it comes to what kinds of fire prevention systems residential homes have. But there may be occasions in which it is required. One of the local government people who deals with this told me that, you know, this would prohibit local jurisdictions to require sprinkler systems when it is an essential life safety measure in an area that does not have sufficient infrastructure or otherwise abilities to address it. What are they talking about? They're talking about residential, new residential facility buildings, residential homes, particularly in places like wildfire interface areas, where there is no way to, once those places get on fire, they burn down. This puts our firefighters at risk, which is why they all came in and opposed it overwhelmingly. We had firefighters, fire chiefs, fire marshals from every place across the state saying that this bill is preemptively not just unnecessary and not required, but there may be places where it might be required to be mandatory. And a bill that just categorically prohibits that is not good for public safety, Mr. Chairman. This is not about personal choice. It's about putting our firefighters and residences at risk. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to speak on this bill and say that we often talk about affordable housing, and this bill does that. This bill keeps housing affordable. And I also wanted to speak to another point that was made. I've volunteered for many years as a volunteer fireman. Residential fire sprinklers inside a house don't do much when you're fighting a fire outside the house. So the two don't work. This is a good bill. Please vote green.
Senator Manzella.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Glimm actually made my point for me. Affordable housing is something we desperately need in Montana, and this bill doesn't create a problem. You can still put a sprinkler system in your home should you choose to, if you want to pay for it. The firefighters did come in opposition to this bill. There's no doubt about that, but it's about freedom of choice and having the opportunity to build a home that you see fit and appropriate and not endure the additional unnecessary expense associated with government mandates. And truly, I really think the correction probably lies or could lie with the insurance company. If insurance companies were offering discounted rates to equivalently cover the costs of the sprinkler systems, more people would be incentivized to actually have a sprinkler system put in their home. But that is not the case. We don't see an equivalent reconciliation between a dropped insurance rate and a sprinkler system. So therefore, let's stand for freedom of choice.
See no further discussion. Does the sponsor wish to close?
Thank you, Chairman. I just want to point out what the proponents had to say. Senator over there had a point of affordable housing. What the opponents forgot to tell you is that an average person in the perfect world will spend about $5,000 putting something like this in there. Someone in the rural area that doesn't have access to water, they have access to a cistern, has to buy a lot of things. Pump, maybe a backup pump, especially where we live in Montana where it's really cold. Generators and things like that. You're looking in a rural area close to $40,000 to $50,000. Now, I argue with you, every time we put an extra $1,000 onto a building, it makes it more and more unaffordable. At this point, adding an additional $1,000 could actually cost 200,000 houses in this area to be unaffordable. At the same time, I also looked up the fact of what kind of reduction you have in insurance. It was so minute, I could buy 5 cups of coffee a year, and it would still be more than what I would get in reduction in insurance. So I bring this forth to you today. Make the decision. I appreciate it. I have a hopefully that everybody here will vote green. Thank you.
The question now arises on the motion of Senator Friedel that when this committee does arise and report after having under consideration Senate Bill 178 to recommend the same do pass. If you are in favor of the motion, signify by voting aye. Those opposed, no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or vote? If not, the secretary will record the vote.
Mr. President, 31 senators vote aye, 19 senators vote nay.
31 senators haven't voted aye, and 19 senators haven't voted no. Senate Bill 178 has passed second reading. Senator Smith.
Mr. President, I move that the committee rise and report.
You've heard the motion of Senator Smith. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The motion carries. Senate will be in order. The secretary will read the report.
Mr. President, we are committee of the whole, having had under consideration business on second reading, respectfully report as follows. Senate Bills 44, 135, 140, 144, 161, and 178 passed. Senate Bill 149 passed as amended. Senate Joint Resolution 3 passed. Senate Resolution 60 adopted.
Senator Friedel.
I move to adopt the committee of report.
For the motion of Senator Friedel that the committee of the whole report be adopted, as many are in favor, signify by voting aye. Those opposed, no. Has every member voted? Does any member wish to change his or vote? Senator Weber. The secretary will record the report. Vote.
Mr. President, 36 have voted yes, 14 have voted no.
36 senators haven't voted aye, and 14 senators haven't voted no. The committee report has been adopted. Thank you, Senator Friedel. Without objection, we'll go to our business number 12, announcements of committee meetings. Senator Aguirre.
Mr. President, Senate Judiciary will meet tomorrow, 9 o'clock, three bills.
Senator Hoven.
Mr. President, Senate Tax will meet tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., one bill.
Senator Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. President. Business and Labor tomorrow, 9 o'clock, room 422.
Senator Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. President. Local government tomorrow, 3 p.m., two bills.
Senator Cuff.
Mr. President, long-range planning tomorrow, 8:30, 317B. We'll be discussing some amendments.
Senator Heimbaum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Fish and Game. Senate Fish and Game will meet in 422 at 3 o'clock, two bills.
Senator Vance.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Senate Highways and Transportation, 3 p.m. today in room 405.
Senator Ankeny.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Energy Telecommunications, 3 o'clock, 317, Section C Subcommittee, tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, 317.
Senator Osmundson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Finance and Claims will meet in 10 minutes. We've got one bill and a little bit of executive, so we'll try to get that out before 3 o'clock.
Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Agriculture will meet today at 3 o'clock. We have one bill and nine execs.
Senator Kerry.
Mr. President, if I may be off and out.
Senator Kerry.
Blood pressure checks tomorrow, Mr. President, Wednesday from noon to 1 o'clock. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Esp.
Thank you, Mr. President. Point of personal privilege, Mr. President.
Senator Esp.
In my presentation on the bill today, I said named a specific grocery store and a specific coffee shop. I should have not done that. I apologize to the body and to you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Esp. Seeing no further announcements, Majority Leader Smith.
Mr. President, I move the Senate stand adjourn until the hour of 1 p.m. on February 17th, the 33rd legislative day.
For the motion, Senator Smith. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate will reconvene at 1 p.m. on February 17th. I forgot about that.